Right, welcome back to Analyzing Trends. I'm joined today by Angela, a cultural analyst and social scientist. Today we are taking stock of television, a field that has spent the past decade oscillating between excess and austerity. There was a time when every week delivered a new must-watch drama, the era we came to call peak TV, with glossy budgets and an endless churn of hype. The mood has shifted. Awards still celebrate craft, but the business has cooled. Budgets are tighter and formats are changing. You can feel the industry searching for balance between prestige that signals cultural status and pragmatic storytelling that can actually sustain itself.
I agree. After years of the streaming wars, we've seen this massive contraction. The business isn't about flexing with cinematic budgets anymore. It's about survival. And the Emmys really spotlighted that divide. Severance on Apple TV Plus, spending nearly $20 million an episode, represents the height of peak TV's excess. Intricate, star-driven, but also fragile and slow-moving. Then there's The Pitt on HBO Max, made for a fraction of the cost, stripped down to one location, and yet it walked away with best drama. That contrast is telling. Severance embodies the logic of an unsustainable era, while The Pitt shows what pragmatic resilience can look like, stories that can be told consistently without collapsing under their own ambition.
Exactly. They've become emblems of opposite poles in this new spectrum. Severance, with its endless production delays and labyrinthine storylines, still carries cultural capital. Watching it is almost a badge. You're signalling a certain taste, a willingness to wrestle with complexity. But The Pitt shows a different kind of power. Shot almost entirely in one location, running on a fraction of the budget, it thrives by showing up steadily, week after week. That consistency resonates. It appeals to audiences who aren't chasing spectacle so much as reliability, or maybe even a sense of sustainability in what they watch.
Which really speaks to how the audience itself has fractured. There's still the prestige crowd who want the puzzle box shows, the kind that demand decoding and reward long attention spans. But alongside them are viewers who crave comfort and, maybe more importantly, reliability. They don't need fireworks. They need something they can count on. And that fragmentation doesn't just shape what gets made. It also shifts who the industry listens to. It's no longer just critics or tastemakers setting the agenda. Now, fan communities, niche clusters, and even casual viewers looking for steady engagement all have a louder voice in steering where things go next.
Absolutely. And the economics are finally catching up with the culture. Studios aren't tossing money at every ambitious pitch anymore. They're recalibrating, and the production models are shifting in step. So the big question becomes, if peak TV was defined by excess, what defines this moment? I'd say it's about navigating new limits, testing where creativity fits when the purse strings are drawn tight, and whether constraint itself can become a source of innovation.
Let's get into it properly. The severance model, what would you call it, the classic puzzle box drama? It's high concept, meticulously designed. Every frame seems to matter. It's also incredibly expensive, and there's an exclusivity baked into it. Watching it isn't just entertainment, it's almost a declaration that you're part of a particular cultural conversation.
It is, and it's slow too. Sometimes years pass between seasons. You need patience and the right subscription just to stay in the loop. Prestige dramas work like cultural badges. If you watch, you're part of the club. The upside is real. Creative ambition, lush aesthetics, intricate worlds that reward deep attention. But the downside is just as clear. When costs balloon and timelines stretch, the whole model comes under strain. It's artistry wrestling with economics, and that tension is getting harder for studios to justify.
Exactly, and that's almost the opposite of The Pitt. Low budget, stripped back, shot with real efficiency. In some ways, it feels anti-prestige. But that's the point. It leans on grounded realism, the kind of storytelling that doesn't need spectacle to work, and the rhythm matters. A new episode every week, the same cast, the same familiar space. It builds a kind of comfort, almost like a ritual. In a landscape where prestige shows test your patience, the pit rewards consistency.
Yeah, television's new stabilizer. Pragmatic storytelling feels like a return to earlier eras when shows were built for continuity rather than glory. But here's where it gets interesting. Prestige dramas stake their claim on artistic value, while pragmatic dramas trade in stability and dependability. And that split isn't just industrial, it reflects how audiences see themselves. For some, it's about taste and status, the badge value of being in on the complex show. For others, it's about ritual and routine, the reassurance of a story that simply keeps arriving on time.
It's funny too, because audiences aren't exclusive about it. Plenty of people will watch Severance and then unwind with something lighter or more formulaic. But the risk is in how those habits harden. At one end, you get a kind of elitism where prestige becomes a niche club for those with the time and patience. At the other, you risk sameness spreading across the middle, formula after formula, comforting but interchangeable. That tension shapes not only what gets made, but how television reflects cultural identity back to its viewers.
Exactly, it's a balancing act. Lean too heavily on prestige and the whole system buckles. Only a handful of shows can actually sustain those budgets. Lean too far into pragmatism, and you risk a landscape of interchangeable content, all reliable but forgettable. It reminds me of what we said in a past episode. The line between innovation and dysfunction is razor thin, and sometimes it's precisely that friction between creative ambition and economic constraint that generates the most interesting breakthroughs.
What's wild to me is how the formats are shifting all over again. Netflix practically trained us to binge. Whole seasons dropped at once, that was the model. But now we're circling back. Weekly drops are suddenly fashionable again. The Last of Us turned Sunday nights into an event, and House of the Dragon did the same. It's as if television is nudging us back into gathering at the same moment, recreating a kind of shared cultural ritual that streaming was supposed to have dismantled.
Yes. And it's not just nostalgia at play, there's real value in building anticipation. When a series rolls out week by week, the conversation stretches, social feeds buzz, theories circulate, memes take on a life of their own. That drip feed creates cultural stickiness. And then you've got the hybrid models, launch with two or three episodes to hook people, then ease into the weekly rhythm. It's clever enough to pull viewers in quickly, but structured so the payoff unfolds slowly, keeping the show alive in public imagination far longer.
It feels healthier, honestly. I'm less likely to binge, burn out, and then forget the show a week later. Weekly viewing restores that sense of collective ritual. People asking, "Did you see last night's episode?" It creates a rhythm of anticipation and conversation that was missing for a long stretch. It's not just about pacing consumption, it's about recovering a shared cultural moment, even if we're all watching separately in our own homes.
And it really does feel like a response to binge fatigue. After years of racing through entire seasons in a weekend only to forget them straight after, people are ready for a different rhythm. Ritual becomes a differentiator now, a way to add texture back into our cultural lives, even if just for a few weeks at a time. It ties into what we've said before about the power of ritual in culture. Repetition can create trust and meaning, whereas pure abundance often just leaves exhaustion in its wake. But beyond all this, there are these fascinating cracks at the margins, places where people aren't playing by the big company rules. Take Means TV, for instance, a cooperative streaming platform that's actually owned and run by the creators themselves. Labour gets a stake. Decisions aren't just made for shareholders. That's a very different model of governance. And we haven't really seen that at scale before in television, and it hints at how alternative ownership structures might start reshaping the landscape.
Yes, and then you've got projects like The Nature of Us on YouTube. Short episodes, deeply personal, sometimes almost painfully niche. In this case, an LGBTQ+ coming-of-age story told with real intimacy. It's a completely different kind of pact with the audience, one built on authenticity rather than scale. Viewers aren't just consuming a show, they're connecting with a voice that feels singular, almost handcrafted. And that makes it powerful in a way prestige or even pragmatic network TV can't quite replicate.
And after the 2023 strikes, there's a different appetite for this. When labour pushes back, suddenly new ownership and funding models don't feel like pipe dreams anymore. They start to look viable. Creator-led or cooperative ventures like Means TV show that if the old structures strain under economic pressure, people will try building new ones. It's a reminder that disruption doesn't always come from technology alone. Sometimes it comes from labour demanding a different kind of stake in the system.
What excites me is that these indie experiments don't have to go mainstream to matter. They draw audiences who want precisely what the bigger platforms can't offer. Authenticity, inclusivity, a real sense of belonging. And there's an economic logic too. If you're not beholden to mega investors, you can survive by serving a smaller but loyal cluster. It's like we said in a previous episode about networks of trust. Smaller, accountable rooms instead of vast, impersonal plazas. That intimacy is a form of resilience. So let's step into the strange new territory, AI storytelling. Have you seen what Showrunner is doing? You can type in a prompt and it generates a fully scripted TV episode using generative models. No writer's room, no traditional process. It's equal parts fascinating and unsettling because it cuts straight to the heart of authorship.
I've tinkered, yes. It's fascinating and also a bit unsettling. There's Nothing Forever as well, that endlessly generated sitcom on Twitch, riffing on Seinfeld. Technically it's glitchy, sometimes even absurd, but the idea itself is explosive. It blurs the line between creator and consumer, between performance and automation. It forces us to ask whether television is still authored art, or if it's becoming a kind of generative system we just tune into.
Right, and that's the tension. On the one hand, you hear the optimistic take. AI could handle the scaffolding, churn out first drafts, or manage the repetitive dialogue so writers can focus on the real, creative leaps. But the anxiety is just as strong, that it won't stop at supplementing, it'll replace. And what gets lost then is more than jobs. The writer's room has always been a collective process, where ideas sharpen against each other. If AI erodes that, you're not just cutting costs, you're undermining the culture of collaboration that gave television its richness in the first place.
And then you hit the thornier questions: ethics, legitimacy, authorship itself. If the algorithm generates the jokes or structures the plot, is it still television in the sense we've known it? Who even gets the credit? The developer? The prompt engineer? Or the AI? It's uncharted territory, but what worries me most is the risk that the very core of television, its collaborative, human-driven process, gets hollowed out. Once you remove that collective craft, the medium risks losing the social and cultural texture that made it matter in the first place.
At the same time, it's a playground for experimentation. Voice, style, even format itself. It's far too early to tell whether these models will supplement, rival, or outright displace traditional television. But what they're doing is undeniable. They're forcing everyone to confront bigger questions about value, about process, and about what audiences actually expect from a show. Are people looking for authorship and craft, or just for novelty and abundance? That uncertainty is what makes this moment so pivotal.
If we look ahead, I think three broad paths are starting to take shape. First, the prestige lane isn't going anywhere. shows like Severance or Shogun don't just vanish, they may become fewer and farther between as platforms get more selective, but they'll remain cultural landmarks. These are the series that gather critical acclaim, dominate award seasons, and still serve as markers of taste and identity.
Yes, and then there's the pragmatic route, steady, sustainable dramas like The Pitt. They're not trying to reinvent the medium, but they've become the backbone of the industry, low risk, efficient to produce, and repeatable year after year. That reliability is what makes them valuable now, especially when budgets are tight and platforms need something they can count on.
And then you've got disruption at the edges. Cooperative platforms, AI-driven experiments, indie dramas pulling together loyal micro-communities, whether it's Means TV or a YouTube series with a cult following. Most of these are small-scale blips, but every so often one breaks through and forces the industry to take notice. That's where the real volatility is, and also where the most radical possibilities live.
The real twist, though, is that it's not a fight to the death. These three frameworks aren't going to collapse into one victor. They'll coexist, each doing different cultural work, prestige setting the aspirations, pragmatism providing stability, and disruption carving out room for novelty or protest. It's messy, but in a way that feels truer to cultural reality than imagining a single dominant mode. Television has always thrived on tension and overlap, and this era just makes that more visible.
So where does that leave us? The future of television isn't about sheer abundance anymore, it's about alignment. The challenge now is to match what gets made to the values and rituals of different clusters of viewers, prestige seekers, comfort watchers, niche communities. All of them are shaping the field at once. In a way, it feels like cultural map-making happening in real time, as studios, creators, and audiences negotiate what television should be and who it's really for.
And ultimately, it's viewers who will keep tilting the balance. Some craving prestige puzzles, others leaning into the comfort of familiar rituals, and still others chasing the obscure shows no one else has even heard of. What we'll see is shifting alliances, a lot of friction, but probably never a winner-takes-all outcome. That diversity is what will keep television alive as a cultural force, even if it looks very different from the peak TV era.
So the question is, will television keep holding our attention as a shared cultural thread? Or will it splinter further, scattering us into smaller niches each with their own rituals and heroes? That's the tension we'll keep exploring here, and it's what makes following this medium so endlessly compelling.
Either way, there will always be stories and communities, just shifting in shape, with new alliances and different rituals. Thanks for joining us on Analyzing Trends. We'll see you next time.
Angela, always a pleasure. Let's see where the next cultural turn takes us. Goodbye all, until next time.
Catch you all soon.